It's supposed to be up here, ain't up here. And maybe he's taking a nap or...
Having trouble getting here?
So I think maybe we should just talk amongst ourselves while we're very much... Who is the oldest person in this room?
Are you in your 70s?
Yes, I am.
Are you in your 80s?
Not yet, but I'll be back here. 80s, 90s, is there any type of... Oh, yeah, we're talking about a fursuit that has a wheelchair incorporated. So I'm going down the aisle in that.
Okay.
Yeah, I find it like really hysterical that the Gray Muzzle Group in Facebook, anybody over 30.
Yeah.
If there's anything that makes me feel old, it's considering people 30 as old. And I'm, you know, up in Methuselah.
Oh, please. Okay. A lot of times, like... If you're 20 or younger, yeah. Is anybody older than me is old.
Yeah, somebody is. Oh, 30. I can't believe I'm so old. Yeah, right.
Old is more than I am right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I said again, I remember when 30 felt like a long time, and next thing you know, you're past it by almost
exactly
a decade. 29? You're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
49.
Okay, that's good too. And so who's 30? Who just made it into the Gray Muzzle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Late 30s, 30-something.
The thing that really makes me happy that 30 is like supposedly the beginning of your Gray Muzzle era means that most of the birds are under 30, which means this band and this community is not going anywhere. It's going to be here for like decade after decade after decade. And that makes me happy that in my dotage, I helped lay the foundation for that. So that's just my desperate effort to keep this going. Somebody else get up. Thank you. Anybody? I'll get back
on. I'm starting to wonder if they just put Gray Muzzle and meeting everyone just discussed. But there is a furry named Gray Muzzle. Gray Muzzle.
But he should be here.
He should be here. He's been at A&E. From Western Mass.
Running on furry time.
Yeah.
I just turned 30.
Go right ahead.
Happy birthday.
I'll be 31 this year.
Is this Furries Anonymous?
Yeah.
Hi, Jerry. My name is Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
I kind of wanted to ask all the older, you know, folks more about, like, what brought you into the fandom.
Yeah.
Because, like, as a younger guy, you know, I had the digital age, you know? Like, when you guys kind of got in, or, you know, guys and gals got into it, it was more like one-on-one personal type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was like the IRC chats and stuff like that, you know, different things that brought you guys into it. But like, just, you know, off the top, like, what got you into it?
Okay, do you mean into the fandom or into appreciated Anthro stuff?
Just the fandom.
Because, well, fandom, you know, like, oh, this is wonderful. By the way, I wrote a book on it, which I have a copy. I'll sell to the highest bid.
I have $3.
It was a letter I got out of the blue, 1988, an invitation at PhilCon in the city to something called a furry party. And I opened it up, and there was like some part of, like, you know, Anthro's cartoon animals and stuff. And it was like, yes, they sent it to me. They sent this to the right person. Nobody had to explain furry to me. I knew exactly what it was the second I was looking at it. And jumped right in and never turned back.
When was it?
This 1988.
And
I came to PhilCon the next year, 89, but that was too late when they got in 88 to jump in.
Did they just randomly send?
Evidently, I was on some mail list of science fiction fans or something.
Okay.
Yeah. Prior to that, anybody remember the Zeman explosion?
The Centaurus Gas newsletter or something like that?
So there were a few of those things. I think a guide to various zines, and there was one for Centaur's Gather newsletter.
Yeah.
And Centaur's, you know, part of my, you know, thing here. And so that, my suspicion is, that's where they got my name from. It was a guy named Ray Rooney who sent it out, and this was the first East Coast furry party, and he got permission from the West Coast furries to throw one here. And so I like to say I didn't get in on, like, the birth, but I showed up around day 3.
That's really, wow, got me really early. I mean, you had to ask permission. I mean, wow, that's wild.
Yeah, and it was cool. I met some people, some furs I still know. Somebody knocked at my door and wanted to know if I got high, and and we've been friends ever since. He's in this room, but I won't point at him. That's my story.
There were some self-published furry zines or furry comics that showed up in Fact Sheet 5. I don't know if you mentioned it. That was a way you could look up different zines and things like that. And I knew a guy named Don Fields who did something called Schmucko Rat.
Oh, I remember.
Schmucko Rat was in a giant Shanda animal, Shanda the Panda, mm-hmm. and it was put up by a company called Mailbox Books. Mm-hmm. And I got the catalog, and there was a little flyer in there for something called Albany Anthrocon. And so I went there, and one of the first panels, there was some guy in a lab coat, and he said, you seem to be interested in giant, tiny people, and animals, things like that. And I was not even online yet. I got online, this is like 97, about a month or two later, and I started discovering all these things. You type out Mac refer, you do this, or different things like that. And so I had gone to that first Anthrocon, where there were about 500 people, and I had a good time. So there were 2 years there, 2 years in Valley Forge, then some years in Philly, and then, of course, Pittsburgh. But I started going to the conventions, and all the stuff online, there was YERF, the Squeaky Clean Furry Archive, a bunch of people putting their stuff on. And back then, if you wanted to share a video, what was YouTube? It didn't exist yet. You would go to a furry con, and up on the 23rd floor of the Adams Mark or something, they'd show some furry videos, yeah. So all of a sudden, with the internet, you had the chat, you know, the IRC, mm-hmm. you had YERF, you had some naughty sites, mm-hmm. you had some not-so-naughty sites. So you had a little bit of everything. You could have Christian furry stuff. Mm-hmm. You could have people our age or people younger, all sorts of stuff, and it started to explode. Mm-hmm. So I started going to these conventions, mm-hmm. and did like an old personal zine where I would do everything from movie reviews to drawing raccoons to whatever. And I just started to get into it. So I was 35 years old in 1997, and again, the first Albany Anthrocon. I have a perfect record at Albany Anthrocon. I even went the past 2 years when they didn't have one. I still went to Pittsburgh, okay? And I've had perfect attendance at Anthro New England, and I've been to a bunch of different panels. But I just grew to love it, and I didn't really know what furry was, but all of a sudden, mm-hmm. there it was online.
Yeah.
And again, people with their own self-published and things like that. You mm-hmm. mentioned Rod Riley, or was it? Ray Rooney.
Yeah, the people out in California, Garden Grove, Prancing Skilltear.
Yeah, there was also Steve Galacci, who did Albedo, and we did a Zootopia panel at Anthrocon, and he said, mind if you join us? Oh, sure, so he got up there and everything. Mm. There's an entire history. Now, his book, this is a commercial, Furry Nation by Joe Strike, okay? I'm on page 31 and 32, all right? He interviewed some of us, and so it's similar to, thank you, it's similar to, what was the documentary, The Fandom?
The Fandom.
There were some others as well, just profiling all sorts of different people. And in my case, it said there are no age limits on furry. Mm-hmm. Bob Nelson is a DJ from Massachusetts, etc. So that book is a great example of the whole furry fandom. And you're going to do a sequel, aren't you?
Oh, I'm about to sign the contract. Hopefully it won't get lost in the mail for Furry Planet.
I thought it was going to be Furry World, but yeah.
And after that, it'll be Furry Solar
Furry
System.
Universe.
Furry Universe. Yeah. Furry Galaxy, then Furry Universe, yeah.
Then the Furry Multiverse.
But, I mean, I do little things. I haven't even really written it out yet, but I fantasize about, let's say, an Earthling landing on a planet. If you remember the old show Land of the Giants, everyone is 12 times normal mm-hmm. size,
yep.
except they're foxes and raccoons and wolves. And, you know, oh, this is a cute little animal and everything, you know. Just, I love things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thanks to things like YouTube and all these things, all these Facebook Live and everything, mm-hmm. it's spreading like wildfire, and there's cons about everywhere.
I think the internet is what really lit the firecracker, the rocket, because people with, like, they didn't know they were furries, but, you know, hey, I like Lion King. I like
Exactly.
Werewolves.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, boom, all of a sudden they're looking at a whole, like, Lion King affinity group, and they need them into furry, and, hey, I'm a furry.
Well, so group for Zootopia and Beastars, and you name it.
Yes, because in pre-internet days, I mean, I think furry had the benefit of sort of piggybacking onto the existing network of anime fandom.
Oh, yeah.
It really was just like using the same phone lines of, you know, communication to network where furry was.
Yeah, that was New York, the anime, monthly anime meeting. In the back of the room, they had all the furries with their early publications and stuff.
We're talking about the mid to late 80s now. And I won't say mid to late 80s, it's like the proliferation of plain paper photocopiers helped making proliferate furry art much easier, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the internet, though, I think the fandom would have stayed underground.
Yes.
Probably,
I go back to the days, early Anthrocons, you would have the Tiger Den room, and there'd be a black screen with yellow print on it, and It would just be type only.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I remember the Amateur Press Association, the APAs?
Yep. Huzzah.
Those things.
Row Browser.
Those mm-hmm. things. The problem was the distribution on them was so small.
Right.
Well, part of it is that several of them were just like a sort of like a members only club kind of thing.
Yeah.
They'd only print up enough to distribute to
mm-hmm.
the 50 or so people who were in it.
If there were 60 contributors to an APA like Row Browser, only 60 copies were made and went to those 60 contributors.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like precious now.
They're
vinyl.
Yeah.
And there were some famous artists, people like Scotty Arsenault. You had Albert Temple, alias Gene Catlow, being part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they would do their own original art, and they would do comments to other furries,
mm-hmm.
you know, hey, I really like what you had to say about this and everything. So that was, but it was very limited.
Yeah.
You could get some at cons, though.
And
they would sell some
of
them.
And you'd submit something, and then, like, maybe you'd get your feedback in 3 or 6 months.
Yeah. But a lot of times when people would try to get big, like, look what happened to Reed Waller when they went after him.
Yeah, but he survived that.
He survived, you know why? Because it was cats, and occasionally a bird, but it was cats. And
mm-hmm.
the definition of pornography was people.
Oh.
And he actually went to the judge and he said, people, does this look like a person? Well, no, look at that head. Is that a person? You know.
In which case was this? Was this in the UK where Knockabout was getting in trouble for
For those of your parents, it's Omaha the Cat Dancer. Look it up. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Well, there's also this attitude that if it's about comics and it's about funny animals, it has to be for kids. So I think that's one of the
I think Fritz the Cat blew that one open years ago.
So piggyback off of that, my first experience was like me wanting to be part of the furry fandom, not knowing about it, was Bucky O'Hare.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That
was like, I was like, oh man, this green, like my favorite color is green, and I love rabbits. And that was actually, it wasn't a green rabbit, but I had a white rabbit. That was my first persona. And I was like, man, that's going to be me. And I was like, I love Bucky O'Hare. And I remember having a VHS of it. And I always watched the first, like, it had the first two episodes of, like, one season of the Bucky O'Hare show. And I always loved it. And I never got to watch any more than that. But because, you know, as most people grow up, you know, like, you grow up in a poor family. Some people do. But I remember that being my first, like, soiree into it. And then from there, I'm like, man, you know, I love this kind of stuff. I like animals that look like, you know, anthropomorphic animals and stuff like that. And then from there, as I got into, I didn't have any experience with, like, the furry fandom until I got into high school. And I remember, so at the time, their name was Tara Clark, and she was a furry. And she wore her fursuit to school for Halloween.
Oh,
and I was like, that's super cool. What is it? She's like, I'm a furry. I'm like, what is that?
That's how it starts.
Yeah, and then she was just like, you don't know what a furry is? And I'm like, no, but I love animals and I like stuff like this. She's like, oh, I'm going to show you.
You're a furry.
And then from there, she was like, here, go into this website and guess which website it was.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, all right, type in, you know, go to FA. And like, she was telling me to go to it, ask her. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, well, I'm glad they don't monitor this. No, they do.
I just want to ask, how many people, everybody's going to raise their hand except maybe 2 or 3 people, how many people were into this anthro/furry stuff before they discovered there was a fandom for it?
I like to say a furry since birth, but when did you discover the fandom?
My first babysitter, my parents would put me down in front of the TV, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, all of the cartoons were there.
Oh, God.
I never moved.
Yeah, I still got them. I got all the
I have a question. How many people in here are multi-generational furry families?
My kids are way too cool to be here with me.
My children introduced me to the fandom.
Oh!
So both of my kids are actually furry. They live small town now, so they don't get to come to conventions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I actually messaged my kids yesterday because I proposed yesterday. So I messaged my kids and I was showing them the picture, and my was sitting next to me and. My son's like, are you in another FurCon?
Oh my goodness.
So I'm just curious because a lot of people are actually surprised by that because my kids, I had a butterfly tiger tattoo like 4 years before I even saw anything that was furry or had any exposure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And first exposure actually was tail end of doors, and I left the house to the ex and his dad, and moved in with my daughter's friends because I didn't have a place to go. And it turned into 7 people in a 1-bedroom apartment.
Ooh, wow.
With giving up a 2,200 square foot home.
Yeah.
Oh, so 2-story home of a family of 5 to 7 people, 1-bedroom, and they had anthro furry, not safe for work art on the wall. And as my daughter, they were showing me around as I was walking, I was like, oh, what's that? She just went, oh my God, my mom's a furry. So, I mean, even her son, first of middle name, Draconics, I'm like, how much more furry can you get for that? That's like what she named her firstborn. So I'm just curious if other people have kids that are also in the fandom.
No, well, my
kids
oldest
left
son,
the fandom.
I just found out he's into D&D. Anyway, I said, okay, you cannot make fun of me ever anymore about being a furry.
My son actually just started, he has a donut shop that my grandparents knew the owners of, and he actually is now the new owner of.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing his donuts every night, and then he realized because COVID, they shut the dining room down.
Mm.
So he can only do the to-go orders, and he's like, I kind of want to make a little extra. He's into D&D, Magic the Gathering, etc. And he's like, I got this whole dining room. I have room for a card shop, so he's actually just started a card shop and everything for D&D, so now I'm like, you can't chase me.
It's funny you mentioned about D&D, because I was always, I had been doing also a little stuff for furry, and also in the D&D, and then I got into a Spelljammer. Well, one of the, before that, I had seen in one of the Mastara, this is all, you gotta remember, this is second edition D&D, where I got started. And I looked in the Mastara book, and I saw the Lupin, the Lupin race, monster race. And I was like, well, look, ooh, what would it be like to play one of those? Beforehand, I was playing half elves and elven rangers with a wolf companion. And I was like, wow. And then I bought the Red Steel box set. And I bought the Red Steel box set specifically because it had wolves. Looping characters. I went along. Remember, this is the second edition. I went along, and only one class had a U for the race, which meant with unlimited advance in that class. And for Lupin, that was Ranger, who was my favorite class. It was almost like I'm only partially kidding by saying this. A light opened up. Foggy angels ran and circled my head, singing hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. So I made a Lupin Ranger to play in a Spelljammer campaign.
Yep.
It was like, and after I did this, by doing that, like something clicked.
Mm-hmm.
It just clicked. And the funny, and then now I've since gone from wolf to wolf bear, but I still love the game. That's why I love D&D 5th edition, Pathfinder 2nd edition. That's why this weekend, when I can, I'm running a furry Pathfinder 2nd edition.
Mm-hmm. I just want to ask other people, what was that's your gateway? Mine was the Looney Tunes, like you were saying, they were every day. I'm wondering about other people's gateway drug.
Yeah, thank you very much. I wanted to touch on the subject of role-playing games at the tabletop and using that as an introduction to the furry fandom. My very first story was, this was late 2002. I lived in Waltham, Massachusetts, and I was a regular patron of the tabletop gaming store there. It was called Danger Planet. And one of the two heads of my D&D group, the DM's husband now, was wearing a Michelle Light t-shirt. Anyone heard of the art of Michelle Light? Anyone ever see the one with the white lab mouse in the green bikini, biohazard symbol behind her, like lab experiment?
I haven't seen that one.
I can't find it anymore either, but trust me, that was the one, and it was cute. And I said, hey, I like that shirt. And they start scratching their heads and wondering, is he one of us? I think I retrospectively hear the wheels turning in their heads. So,
very shortly after that, they brewed up a little scheme. They ran a game of Palladiums after the bomb setting, a game about mutant animals. Mm. And I rolled for random species in exchange for higher stats. And besides, you know, I kind of had a mental image. It's like, I didn't know there was a fandom, but I imagined if there was, dogs and cats are probably as common as, well, dogs and cats. I'd like to be something different. Mm-hmm. How prophetic that was. And I rolled otter.
Oh.
And mm-hmm. I've been an otter ever since.
All right.
Yeah. And 1 year later, I met my ferret here.
Yay.
I had a horrible ferret. Mm. Seen him bouncing around as Duke Derhu around the convention.
I've always been more of a solitary sort, so internet was always a big thing for me. I read books, I read everything, and then I found webcomics. And my God, there was an explosion of webcomics when I was younger. Like, and so many, even if they're not furry webcomics, every single webcomic has an animal character in them because they're just so much more fun than humans. Go figure.
Yeah, there's one webcomic that was actually put in newspapers for a while and then didn't last too long, but it's still on the web. It's called My Cage, and it's all anthro characters, and it's like the kind of thing where all the humans died out, and their god they call the cartoonists. So and it's just really clever. I recommend it. I'm a Patreon supporter of it. Just My Cage. Go check it out. That's my recommendation there. Go.
You first.
I'll
go next.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, how I got into it was The Secret of Nim.
Yes.
I've been involved in the fandom since before it was a fandom.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like you, I discovered the Ninja Turtles after the bomb and Riffs.
Yeah,
because the character I came up with was a kangaroo rat version of Mad Max.
Nice. Nice.
And then went through. I got involved with the hobby gaming industry. I was working for a miniature wargaming company. If any of you have ever known the game Iron Claw, my company made the miniatures for it.
I have Jason Claw at home.
So from then on, it was. I still have an article from a comics paper that was the up and coming anthropomorphic community. There was no mention of furry at that point. So, I've been around it for a while. But I remember the very first comic that I got that was anthropomorphic was I was in a local comic shop, and I got Albedo Anthropomorphic Theologies number 0.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember telling the guy, I'm just going to buy the one. Years later, I now have a palette.
That's where it started.
And I have actual conditions.
Nice.
Speak up, young man.
This is more of a more of a question than a story. But that when I discovered the fandom in my college years, 1993, it was from furry marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And back then it was still called furry. So I was curious for those who have been there longer than I. When did it shift from becoming anthros to furry?
I think early on. I mean, I was invited to that furry party in 88, and I only knew it as that. So I think, I tried to dig this up. A couple of people, I found two people, each one said the other guy said it first. So it's a mystery, but I think pretty early on. You know?
I would say at least as far back as 87, when the parties in San Diego or BayCon or wherever were being called furry parties.
I remember in the 70s they would still refer to it as anthropomorphic. So right around, this is going to sound dumb, but I remember because it was around the bicentennial. So around 76, they were still using the term anthropomorphic. I did not hear the term furry until, I want to say, the late 70s, early 80s.
But they were actually using the word anthropomorphic. That's a
anthro.
Big word.
Yeah, anthro scum. Before there was furry trash, we were Anthro scum, okay?
I do own the bet that the change happened largely because, as you say, it's a big word. Furry is a lot smaller than tybal. I've heard tybal, I've heard it say, and not everybody knows just off the top of their head what anthropomorphic means unless they're in the fandom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of convenient shorthand for my house.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed lately is that anytime there's something in the mainstream, sexy beast or masked singer, it's described in the media as furry, or furry's going to love it, furry's going to hate it. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of being pulled along, or we're pulling along the culture with us, when either way. Well, yeah, you're going to
be caught in the crack now, I think.
So, when about 2005, about a year after I graduated high school, and at home high speed internet first started taking off. I'm not going to lie, like I'd always like, you know, I'd always watch the cartoons. I always like loved the anthropomorphic animals because there was always a stereotype with them. Mm-hmm. You know, the lions are always brave, the wolves are always like, you know. Technically, at the time, they were bad. Fox is always cunning, things like that. But for me, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I remember going on my friend's computer, and let's just say I found his homework folder. And in that homework folder, there was a folder for what he termed monsters. And that's where I found, lo and behold, Boggy and Crystal Fox from the Starbucks.
Mm.
And I followed that rabbit hole when I got home. And so, you know, a lot of people don't, like, there's a lot of people that don't want to mention the sexual side because of the stereotypes that come with furries. Mm-hmm. But I owe a lot of my sexual awakening to the furry fandom because of that rabbit hole. Because I finally found a community where I could feel comfortable in discussing these things, because I grew up in South Alabama, where it was taboo to discuss any of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I could really, like, you know, let myself become a little bit more familiar, not just with myself, but with other people. But I also started discovering, I love writing. I've always loved writing. And I discovered Mucks and Muds, where the community was good. The community, they loved role-playing with each other. They loved, like, just, like, text throwing snowballs at each other. It wasn't even, like, that sexual, unless you really wanted it to be. But the friendliness that I had was what really got me into the furry fandom, what really made me want to step in and explore more. And then it started blossoming into, look at this amazing art. Look at these amazing artists, this beautiful artwork. People are pouring their heart and souls into not just written words, but like pictures and music, and now videos. And the one thing that keeps me in the furry fandom all the time is just this wonderful, this creation. It's just wonderful creation all the time. And it doesn't matter if it's sexual or not, because, you know, like, we are artists. At the core, the furry fandom is a bunch of artists. And the one thing I've noticed is every time I see, especially art becoming popular on the fandom, at some point it will get into the major like, I like to say furries are trendsetters. Whether people want to acknowledge us or not, we set the trends half the time. Because we are a community of artists first. So, yeah, that was how I got into it. It's like, I'm not going to say that, like, the taboo sexual side is always, like, we don't want to mention that, because there is good to it.
No, I think we have to acknowledge that there is a sexual aspect to the fandom, and we don't have to shout about it, but we should acknowledge and respect it. If there are some people who access their sexuality or get excitement out of it, you know, I don't think anybody has to write, oh, he's freaky, he's kinky. I mean, there's something called kink shaming, and, you know, I think we should avoid kink shaming. I think everybody in this room almost has some part of furry interest that they keep to themselves, more or less.
Except pedophilia. You can kink shame that all you want.
That's not a kink, that's abuse.
I think the problem is, at least from my point of view, is that the younger guys, like, I mean, I know I'm young compared to a lot of you guys, but the younger crowd generally makes the sexual aspect of it their personality. And that's what a lot of people tend to see.
you know, like, oh, you know, like, and there's nothing, I personally don't see anything wrong with that being an expression of yourself. But a lot of the time, and it's a lot of ire from both sides, you know, as you know, the younger crowd is, it's a lot of, like, back and forth because they get really clicky and about things. But yeah. Some people are like, oh, well, who cares if you're this, that, the other thing? Why does it always have to be about sex, this, that, and the other thing? I'm like, the thing is that for a lot of people, it's an expression of something that either they can't be expressive in their daily lives, and it's a way to get those things out and be yourself in a way that you couldn't otherwise. Because I think all of us here understand that we're all very accepting of each other, and we want to have a space that's, you know, no judgment. And a lot of that is the younger crowd obviously don't embrace that to the fullest extent. They only embrace it in their groups instead of as a widespread thing. So, my.
Is there anybody in the room?
That's only my opinion.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll shut up. I talk too much. Yeah.
Just kind of in response to that, I was young and horny once too. You know, so, you know, we.
I'm still young.
Yeah, exactly. I'm old. But the I think the thing is though is that you point out like making kind of like the sexuality. Well, I mean, I remember when I was like 18, 19 years old. You know, like running out to the clubs and stuff. Yeah, you know, I was looking to get some. You know, I was definitely, you know, I was dressing a lot hotter than I do now. You know. And stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, I was kind of, like, thinking like that. And I think the thing is kind of like, you know, when you're young and right, have fun, you know, use a condom, you know, be smart about it, you know. But, you know, I mean, obviously I can understand. It kind of gets to a point for me as well, though. Like, if, say there's someone that's, you know, like, you know, like late teen, like 19, 20 years old, like, you know, 17 years younger than me at this point, and I'm kind of like, I'm not comfortable around that for me personally, like, because, like, you know what? It's like, let's chill out. Because I think, because I've been involved with the band since about 2001 myself, mm-hmm. about 20 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think as I've gotten older, I think the way I kind of conduct myself, I change that. Because that how people perceive you is that once you kind of hit, people might look at you as creepy or this or that. So it's kind of a, wait a second, let me slow down, you know? Yeah. But definitely, yeah, when I was younger, absolutely. Like, I was out there to get some. I was definitely not like I am now, you know,
it's a much larger part of your
reserved,
world.
Reserved, right, exactly. And I think, too, and really kind of just even hitting that 30 age, I kind of thin in the back of my head, I'm like, you sort of have to really think about how you act because you can only go so long partying and this and that before people stop taking you seriously. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you kind of go, okay, let me put the brakes on for a second. Yeah. And sometimes it's kind of important to, like, also think about what you've learned and kind of impart that knowledge, you know, a little bit as well. but yeah, I mean, it's always going to be there, and it's like, I'm certainly not going to, like, be like, oh God, you know, that's terrible. It's like, well, people do their thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of like how, yeah, some people that are older than the fans that have nine complain, oh, things aren't like what they used to be. Well, things change. Oh,
absolutely.
And I think part of feeling and staying relevant in the fandom, too, is also kind of adapting to that change and being willing to learn new things.
Mm-hmm. From the
and
really
learning to accept new things. Yeah. And I think that's important.
Yeah, this guy back there, he's been like waving.
Something to tack on to both of these points, and this is coming from the marketing side of viewpoint as well, not that I'm involved in it. We've got the talk of why, like, the younger, newer generation coming into the fandom has their certain drive and focus on the outside that we see, and how it is still an aspect of society. And even still, in a marketing sense, two words. Sex sells. And now that we have the blossoming of the internet into everything that we have, where art is readily available and people are able to express themselves, it sells. It makes people money. And in this day and age, you need to make yourself money. But I think the key thing that keeps us here, because that's one thing to draw you in, sure. But I think the thing that keeps us here is the community itself. I have never, ever seen or heard of a community of people who are so loving, so accepting, so understanding about everything. And there have been so many wonderful relationships, so many different things that I wouldn't have met my husband now, and we've been together for 10 years
mm-hmm.
because of this family.
Yeah.
I that the internet and the fandom had a lot to do with it. I grew up here in Jersey by myself, South Alabama. You know, how does that happen? But like, we've met so many friends that we've made through the way, and but these are friendships that are going to last for a lifetime. So that is something that I think is what bonds us all together truly. Mm-hmm. This is also something I want to add to that too. Thank you, by the way, to everyone who is older than me. Thank you for paving the way for those of us who are younger to experience such a community, for helping to create something that is so accepting and so readily available for people to, you know, like me, to run to when we feel like we're surrounded by people who don't accept us or aren't going to and we're afraid.
Yeah, I think that's like something that draws us all together, why we're so kind, because we've all felt like outcasts at one point or another.
Everybody here, come on. I was remembering way back in the beginning, you had Albedo, Anthropomorphics, Vicky Wyman's, Xanadu, Mouse, and there wasn't the stigma at the time. And
yeah.
It's interesting to go through all these years and see it and how it's grown despite it. My question to everyone, and this is something I'm still dealing with, is over the years, I'm now in my 50s. Somebody said that he was young and horny once.
Show of hands.
Ronnie Dangerfield's, I'm remembering Ronnie Dangerfield's comment. It says, I'm at the age now, I pull into a parking space, I need a cigarette. but it's this, the fandom I still keep in the closet. Like at work, I had to ask for this weekend off. They know I'm going to a comic. And I've been very involved with comic books and gaming, so they don't question it, but I don't. Mm. Except for the friends in the fandom, I completely keep it at arm's length. And I want to know, has anybody else had to deal with that?
Well, I used to tell people I was going to animation conventions, and I thought, "Oh, the hell with it! I'm furry. I'm going to furry conventions, and yeah. I don't care."
Convince people that you're really amazed by the bridges in Pittsburgh.
I think sometimes it can be a bit of a generational thing.
Yeah.
Just because you have younger parents now, like millennials, are now have adult kids that are in the fandom. Like, oh yeah, that's cool because you know our age could be a little bit different than my parents who were born in the 40s.
Sure.
They don't need to know about this. It's not their business.
Mm-hmm. We're fans. You've got sports fans, Grateful Dead fans, you've got fans of art and architecture and history, all that sort of stuff. That's what we're doing. We're coming and we're getting together, and we might be all different ages and genders and who knows whatever, but there's something in common, and tolerance and love is part of it. But let's face it, we're fans of ourselves. I think Kage said something like that.
My mom knows that I sometimes draw no sex for work. Yeah.
And like, I think we've gotten a lot more accepting of it. Because like, in the dealer's den just yesterday, I heard a mom talking about how to get her child a fursuit head. Like, wow. People were telling them, like, yeah, just go with the fursuit head. They're going to outgrow anything else. It's like, can you imagine that in the past?
No. Yeah.
We have a few hands up for people patiently waiting.
I think Bunny here had his hand up before.
I just wanted to bring up something. And that's, you know, we can go back, and obviously we all know about some of the early stuff. We all know about TMNT. We all know about Omaha. We all know about a lot of this stuff, but go back further. Did you know that in Gulliver's Travels, one of the kingdoms that he visited, I see one person is nodding.
Horses.
Two.
The Hoonahan.
Yeah. Horses.
Yeah, the Hoonahan.
And
hold
they
your horses.
Were better than people.
Yeah.
And it broke his heart that he couldn't stay with them. But other than that, go back and look. Really, I hate to use this phrase, survey the literature. Watership Down. Next year will be 50 years. Watership Down. Watership Down brought me into the band.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It also, the book saved my life, quite literally.
And
there's so much stuff. A couple years after, 10 years after Watership Down, you had Brian Jakes created the Redwall series. Has anybody not heard of Redwall? Okay, if you haven't, read it. It's amazing. There is so much really quality anthropomorphic literature out there.
Listen, you go back to Canterbury Tales, you got the story of Chanticleer. Mm-hmm. And that's like English lit, that's serious stuff. What's his name? Hieronymus Bosch, you see his panels, and they're full, and they're full of anthropomorphic animals torturing humans. It's a lot of
Egyptian religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Look at old photography, and there's a lot of vaudeville performers that were dressing in, I mean, they're furries, dude. I mean, seriously, they're very realistic looking costumes, and that was their pantomime. They would perform on stage as a dog or as a horse, and they had those fantastic costumes.
I think I saw that black and white picture a couple months ago. Yeah.
Whether you were a gray muzzle or an elder fur, we know who we are. Whether you're a gray muzzle or an elder fur, you should know your history. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't know our history, what are we going to pass on to the next generation?
Or we're doomed to repeat the mistakes we've made.
Well, we're probably going to repeat those anyway.
Well, yeah.
No, they're going to take over there, or they already are. You know, it's a gradual thing. It's not like, up to midnight, it's this generation. It's like replaces it gradually. And there's going to be stuff that's going to be carried on, and there's going to be stuff that the younger furs are going to introduce, and it's going to keep on evolving. I want to see it be accepted as much as sci-fi fans or Harry Potter fans, that we're just people who are in a certain thing, and that it's something we've created ourselves, which is, I think, the real magic of it. Yeah.
Yeah, some of that's had their hand up for a while.
Yeah, this is
in response to your question, if anyone else had had to distance themselves from the furry fandom to with their profession, I imagine, yes, there are. Most people would feel that way. Mm-hmm. Understandable. I was lucky. I've been at my job for 14 years, and I have a really good working relationship with my managers and a lot of coworkers. It's one of the reasons I stay there, even though they pay me dirt.
you should see our dinner salad.
One day they said they were going to do this. They were going to do a charity
fixed itself
at a baseball stadium.
Thanks, Jesus.
And I, for the past 10 years, Otter and I, we belong to a New England-based furry charity group. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. It's called High Corn Entertainment.
I've not heard of it, but I'm from that region.
There are still only about the 25 to 30 of us. We have a website and a card now. It's just a small thing, but...
did we even bring the business cards?
We did. Well, not here, but we have
the room.
We have somewhere here. But we reach out to larger charities for cancer, autism, what have you. We call ourselves performers, mascotters. We don't bring the word furry into it.
Don't say the F word.
We let them know that we're there to lend our time to entertain the people who are attending these events, and just to add to contribute to the cause of that. And it over the years has grown, and we have many testimonials from the people who run these other charities, and we get re-invited. Year after year, before the pandemic.
Is it an online presence, right?
Yes.
What's the website?
High Four Entertainment, that's all one word.
H-I-G-H?
No, just
H-I.
H-I-4, the number 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit of a hiatus because of the pandemic, understandably.
High Four Entertainment.
Just do a search for that and you'll see the real pump.
Okay. To go back to your question,
I was getting somewhere.
Sorry.
So I brought this up to my manager. Said, I belong to this thing, and here's the mascot thing that I wear. And she was charmed as hell, and she said, "Okay, come with us, bring it." And I went to the thing, and everyone loved it. And when I went, my other manager didn't even know it was me until I took the head off. It just blew away. And it said, "Why aren't you this enthusiastic while you're working?"
You were working,
there you go.
Nobody's going to ask a parent to sell credit cards.
I will say that when you meet people one-on-one and you start explaining it to them, they will generally say, hey, that's pretty cool, I didn't know, or I thought it was something different. So I think, you know, we need to, you know, speak up and say, you know, this is who we are, not necessarily up to total strangers, but when the opportunity arises, you know, it's not something you should hide from. You should say, yeah, I'm here, and yeah.
Exactly.
No, we're not all about that one. 17 years combat arms in the Army, 30 years as a public school teacher. I live in the closet.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Not too late.
No, give me 3 years. When I'm retired, fuck it.
I've actually had multiple opportunities to talk to strangers about furry because I actually wear my persona with me all the time. And I've had a lot of people go, oh, well, what is that? That's really pretty. And I'm like, oh, that's my persona. Well, what is that? It's amazing, though, how many people are very receptive to that, complete strangers. And I actually had a waitress one time had commented, and I have a lot of ink, so she had commented about it, but it was this one in particular that really caught her eye. Mm-hmm. And she kind of did one of these and went, are you a furry? I mean, we started talking, and it turns out she was a furry, but, you know, she wanted your coworkers to know.
Yeah.
And she actually asked me the question. She said, don't you ever worry about everybody knowing that you're a furry? And I'm like, the only ones I would have been worried about is my kids, and they introduced me to it. So, so I mean, there is a lot of positivity out there. People that are understanding. I've only actually, I think, a couple of times ever ran into, and probably everybody here has ran into. Oh, you must be into to you know, screwing animals because you're doing that, and you get that whole negative vibe. And I'm like, don't trust everything you read on the internet, because I don't care what fandom you're in or what walk of life you're in. There will always be some people that are into some things that are not commonly okay. I said, but that is not the majority of the furry. And I'm like, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, you know, that's where a lot of people started with.
I think a lot of negativity comes down to two things. People assume either bestiality or pederasty. You know, because, oh, you turned off animals. Oh, this is something that only little kids should like. So why are you hanging out with little kids?
See, let's interject, but how long is the panel room left for this?
I don't know.
Okay, the next panel is me, and it's supposed to start at 6. We can do it for a few more minutes, and then we'll ease into classic cartoons. Thanks to Joe, by the way, for taking the baton here. I was about to do the same thing when it looked like we weren't going to get anyone. But you want to do it for a few more minutes, and then I do have some clips to show. I have some talk. But let's do it for a few more minutes, a few more questions. You want to do that, or you want to go into classic cartoons? Go ahead.
Because I grew up in a household, my mom is heavy on music. And both of us, like, I remember my mom from a very young age used to look at me and say, look, you're going to have stereotypes on you no matter what. Mm-hmm. You're a big kid. People think that people aren't hygienic. They think they're not.
They lost it again.
You know, they think that they're lazy. They don't do anything. My mom can work circles around people. So, like, it's one of those things where it's like, we have to fight those stereotypes in little ways every day. Every conversation, and it begins to become so natural. Like, it's, you know, like I said, just remaining really hygienic. But, you know, for me, or to, you know, be a hard worker, you know, it's like you're fighting a stereotype just by being you, just by not, you know, feeding into the things that everybody wants.
Exactly.
Like, the bad media that everybody wants to attack is
the
CSI.
Well, you know, I think the fandom, I think the fandom's gotten big enough that, like, we all had the bug, and then we found out the fandom. I think the fandom is getting big enough and well-known enough, it may start attracting people who weren't into being furry to start with. Oh, this is pretty interesting. I'm going to get involved. Yeah. So I think that's been going to be happening, too.
Someone in the back, yeah.
We run into those bad stereotypes. We take that one person, and we're like, no. We don't associate with that.
Yes.
Someone in the back.
That CSI episode would be the very day I was going to the first fur fight in Connecticut.
That thing is 18 years old and it's still haunting us. 2003.
Bisexuality, not everybody knows, and my wife knows that I am bisexual because, well, I don't present as gay in any way. And I have an amusing anecdote I give to those who are surprised to find that I'm bisexual. I'm gay enough to like dick, not enough to have fashion sense.
All right. I think we're all set. I'm going to...